Movie Mavericks.
The Movie Mavericks Podcast.
Movie Mavericks, speaking of fucking long, uncut European cocks.
The Movie Mavericks Podcast.
Now for your hosts, Jason and Trevor.
I can't wait.
Hey now, everybody. Welcome to episode 325 of the Movie Mavericks Podcast. I'm Trevor Anderson, sitting over Jason Brugard, who has a rundown for us.
All right, on tonight's show, we'll be doing a little bit of talking about some movie topics, but mostly we'll be doing reviews and trailers. We got a quick in-and-out show for you guys tonight. We don't want to waste your time, nor ours, so we're going to get right into it right at the top.
And now, we're going to get you pregnant right away.
Yeah, we come to fertilize. Let's talk about Blade Runner, which has a long running time. Did you hear about this situation here, this 164 minute running time for Blade Runner? Although I like that the press release on this says it is the longest Hollywood released blockbuster of the year, beating Transformers by about 12 minutes there. It states, but it also has 11 minutes of credits. 11 minutes of credits? I hope they don't have an end credit
sequence. Well, it would be a lot of, sit through that. I can imagine. There'd be a lot of special effects work on it, so you could fill that up.
Does it make you want to see it less? Does it hamper? Are you excited for this? I'm really getting excited for this.
Every time I see the trailer, initially it comes on, I think, oh God. And by the end of the trailer, I'm like, I need to see this fucking movie. So I don't know. It that running time could ruin the movie. I don't know that there's a lot for that movie to cover. So it makes you wonder why it's so long. But at the same time, it is a detective movie, right? And those can be kind of slow.
Yeah, because there's misleads and things like that, dead ends, and it's kind of
Well, he's discovering things and stuff, and I think when you take your time doing that kind of stuff, it adds to the ambiance, I guess, really, of that, right? Because he's going to take his time to kind of poke around and look at things.
It's clearly an atmospheric film with the score so heavily in the trailer. I hope they use that score, by the way, in the trailer. It's a gorgeous sounding thing, although one of their composers just left this weekend. One of Villeneuve is there, his frequent collaborator, the director's frequent collaborator, just left this project, the guy who did the Arrival score and a couple other things. So that's not a great sign, but Hans Zimmer's still on and another fella, so we'll see how this turns out. But speaking of giving away too much, did you hear that Mark Hamill is rallying against the Last Jedi comic book adaptation?
Why?
Well, apparently it contains spoilers from the movie, and it's going to be released beforehand, kind of like the novelization.
That happens all the time. Yeah, I don't know that I would be so worried about that. That happens all the time.
Not fair.
Yeah, it does. But I mean, that's been going on for years. You mentioned novelization stuff. There's been plenty of times when movies have been spoiled by third party, media based on the movie that's come out. All kinds of stuff. So I don't know that really matters. If you want to sell that stuff, a good way to sell it would be to do it like this, right? Because people who are super interested will now be pushed to perhaps buy that kind of crap.
I didn't even know it was on the radar, but now I'm kind of interested. Like, what's going on then in this thing?
I don't know. I do find it interesting that people are petitioning to remove J.J. Abrams as the new director for the last one.
It's a little rough, don't you think?
Yeah. I don't know. Who else could replace Colin Trevorrow,
I think Brad Bird is going to get the nod here at some point. He did a decent job there with the Mission Impossible film, and he's got that sensibility. I think he would make a pretty logical choice to hand the reins over to in this situation. Also, though, on the Hamill and the spoilers there, the minutiae of Star Wars spoilers go so far as to when the John Williams score was released for Phantom Menace, one of the track listings was The Death of Qui-Gon.
Sure.
People didn't even know who Qui-Gon was yet, and they were pissed. But I understand that, but at the same time, what do you expect? You know what I mean? If you're that keyed into everything to do with this movie or any movie, you're going to find things out about it. If you don't want to know anything about it,
you're
don't
looking.
Read about it.
Why are you looking?
Stop looking, asshole.
Yeah, I mean, I've got to the point where I don't read a lot of stuff unless the movie is just about out and it's you know, pressed directly from the studio or something. That's typically safe, but other than that, yeah, don't read the blogs and stuff about it if you're not interested in it or if you don't want to know, because they will find out, because they do scour.
They will find
they find this shit out. Yeah, and like you said, toys and stuff, and there has been revelations even for this next Star Wars based on toys and stuff, so it happens all the time.
Jamie Lee Curtis coming back to the Halloween franchise. This happened 20 years ago with big Halloween deal. H2O in 98. You're not a fan of this.
Everyone's,
you don't think
loving
this.
It. I don't know. That's a big deal right now to everybody. I don't know why.
We had talked about this off air, and I had suggested that this adds some sort of legitimacy to the franchise. And what did you say?
I don't know. I think I said something. What legitimacy has she added to any movie she's been in? I mean, which is true. She's just not that she's a bad actress, but she just kind of does show up in things. You know, it doesn't really do much for anything. But
I just feel like we beat this pony before in '98 when Kevin Williamson was coming back to write the definitive Halloween film, and it turned out to be shit. It was Halloween H2O.
It doesn't really matter because I think the Halloween bus has left a long time ago. You know, yeah, I'm very much done with the Halloween and the remakes and stuff. It's just not. It's really nothing special, and it hasn't been for a long time.
Yeah, it's well said on that franchise. And yeah, the whole slasher genre is very just – it's past its time.
Oh, yeah.
They haven't found a good way to translate that into this era.
I see, like, you could get away with releasing, like, a really good Jason movie right now. But I tell you what you could probably not get away with is releasing several Jason movies, you know, one every year. It's just – really run its course. You know, I don't think people, and we've already seen that with Saw, right? Now they're going to come out with Jigsaw here, and I'm sure they're going to try to keep it going, but I bet they're going to have a tough time of it.
They might have a good, decent start here with this first one, because it
actually
looks
like it looks
good.
Really good. Yeah, but that's what I'm saying, right? Anything that follows this, they may have a hard time with it if they choose that route.
That's because we've become accustomed to, especially in the horror world, that any sequel or follow-up is way subpar to the previous entry, and then you just keep getting this, like, generational loss each time. You know, you just get this gets distilled each time.
Yeah, but then you have things like Insidious, which are bad all the way around every single time, and people keep going to see them. So I guess, you know, there's always an exception to the rule.
I mean, yeah, because if you're talking about that, then you're talking about like James Wan and the Blumhouse guys, which are really the two powerhouses. That's like the Wes Craven and John Carpenter of this, which I mean, is all due respect to those guys. Wan and Bloomfield are way more commercially successful than Carpenter or Craven ever were.
Yeah, by far.
You know, they're biggest, yeah, unfortunately. Or fortunately for horror, because horror is making a hell of a comeback. This is the year that horror and comedy, I thought, would come back too, but it has not yet outside of Girls Trip. And I think that horror will continue to do very well. I think this just keeps spreading. Like you said, with the success of It and the groundbreaking box office, it's run. Mm-hmm. It's the highest September release of all time as we stand now, two weekends in a row.
It's been, though, highly commercialized at this point. You know, it the horror that you get nowadays is not even close to the horror you got last decade. You know, aside from things like Insidious, I would say is pretty close to being like a standard crap run-of-the-mill horror thing. But when you look at a lot of what Wan does or even a lot of the Blumhouse stuff is just more commercial. You know, it's just homogenized a little bit more than we're used to, I guess.
Let's talk reviews. Let's get into it. You saw It. It is the number one film in the country, 2 weeks running. Number one film in the world now, 2 weeks
Good
running.
Lord, I know.
It's now
in the money.
It's going to make $300 million just on part one here. I grew up on the miniseries. Went back and watched a little bit here before I go see this big screen redo. I really like that miniseries. It's got problems, of course. It's, you know, 30 years old, if not, or 25 years old.
Sure.
And made for television. But it is spooky. The book still holds up. I've been doing the audiobook on that, to be fair. I haven't actually been reading it, but listening to the words. And it all still holds up. How's this redo?
So everything, you know, all the problems that you have in the miniseries, this takes care of. But all the things that the miniseries does well, this fails at. So you kind of need both, you know. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, but this certainly doesn't wipe out the work that was done in that miniseries. And I have to say, this kind of has, you know, just so to make an odd comparison here, this kind of has an American Reunion issue. Which basically to say that when American Reunion came out, if you remember all the gags in it and everything had already been done previously, say, you know, the last 5 years when it came out, you know, and it really was no longer fresh.
It felt behind the curve.
You know, it was well behind the curve. And that's the same thing with it. You know, we've seen this done better, you know, Stranger Things. What was the Abrams movie with the alien? Super 8. Yeah, we've just seen this done better.
This 80 nostalgia? And,
yeah, and it's unfortunate because really this adaptation is no more than vignettes of scenes from the book kind of compressed and pushed into this coherent in the sense that one thing happens after another story, you know, but it's not really well thought out or well plotted. And, you know, that's the biggest issue that this has is that it just doesn't, there's no breathing room in this movie at all. It's should be longer than 2 hours. The 2 hours is too heavily cut back. And I also have to say the horror is pretty weak. It's not scary. And I think this all comes down to this Andy Muschietti director guy who I'm not a fan of. I did not like Mama. I thought it had the same problems that this movie has, where it relies heavily on the special effects to get the scares, rather than, you know, suspenseful directing and whatnot. And so it just, I don't know, the movie fell flat for me quite a bit. It never really sucked me in. I always was very aware that I was watching a movie the whole time. They don't set up the town of Derry very well. You don't get the sense of a lot of the things that the book gives you, you know, and having read the book and watching these things and seeing these little kind of takeaway things happen and thinking, wow, that was very powerful in the book and it really set up this whole thing. If I hadn't read the book, this would be would lose its complete impact on me.
Is it because their second part, is it incomplete? Is that what's going on here?
No, it's not incomplete. You know, it's just too fast. And even the ending where they go into the sewers and fight it is just not, it's not impactful. You know, it's not scary. It's not, it just doesn't work, you know, as far as I'm concerned. And the kids are great in it. You know, the humor works incredibly well, I thought. But it's just, I don't know. It leaves a lot to be desired. And it explains nothing about it, you know, in the way that the book does. So you really don't, by the end of the movie, you really have no concept of what the hell just happened. Unless you read the book, which is, I think, a big letdown, you know, because you don't understand that it is kind of controlling the town. You know, it's like a presence throughout the entire town. They don't really nail that in any specific way, you know, and they introduce the bad character, the bully, you know, whatever the hell his name is, the main bully in those groups, and they're really just kind of a tool in this rather than complete characters like in the book, you know. And so it just, it's too fast, you know, it's too fast. There's too much cut away from it for how much is included for you to be able to get a feel for what the hell is actually going on. You know, and every scene is lightning quick, man, except for the opening scene. But literally every scene is just bam, 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 bam.
That's funny you said that, because that was my problem with The Dark Tower. I thought that movie should have been longer and it needed to be more drawn out to tell its story. So I'm curious what you think of that when you see that, because that's 90 minutes compared to this is, I think, 2 hours and 15 minutes.
And so you're terrible.
If 2:15 flew by, then you know that this should have been at least 2:45.
I think this is only like 2. I don't even think it's 2:15, is it?
I saw it listed at 2:15 here, but regardless, that's not very long.
It has long credits, I'm sure, like everything else. So
11 minutes of credits, sir.
Yeah, really needs another half an hour just to be probably decent on the safe side. This is this is a huge book, you know.
It's a miniseries.
This really needs to be 3 hours. Or, yeah, really, a Netflix miniseries would have been perfect for this rather than two movies. And I was excited at the two movies, you know, because it makes sense to split it up. But I don't know. It does kind of hurt it a little bit not to be told in this different kind of way.
So you're recommending it, but you're not. It's a mixed recommendation.
I'm not happy with it, but, you know, it's good in its own ways. You know, the production value's up there. It looks fantastic. It just doesn't, just left me wanting a lot more from it, you know. And I hope the way they're talking about the second one is kind of like they're going to fill in a lot of these gaps and maybe try to fix things. But then again, I don't know. What is that going to be? 2 hours long too? How are you going to do that? You know? So I don't know.
It's an interesting concept of the back-to-back, and this is such a huge hit, you might have 3 or 4 of these, you know. You might have prequels and all sorts of crazy shit now because this is maybe spawned its own franchise. Mm-hmm. But
possible.
I'm going to see it because this is like a water cooler event now at this point, and I'm a fan of the other stuff. So.
It's just a weak adaptation, you know, in general. The writing and the direction are not good as far as story goes, and the direction's really not. I don't know. Did you like Mama?
Yeah, I did.
This guy's in the movie, you did?
Yeah, I did.
I was not impressed, and so
I actually was. Yeah. That was the this is Guillermo del Toro's like protege, this guy. So
yeah,
I thought he was effective on that, and I like. Although this does look like you said, the Stranger Things, Super 8, been down that road. You know, we're all Goonies. This is Stand By Me.
Well, it doesn't do it as well either as a thing.
Yeah,
you know.
Where's Chris Columbus?
I mean, that's the thing I would say. Go back and watch Super 8, and watch the direction of Super 8 versus the direction on it, and. I think you'll see what I'm saying.
Columbus. Where's he at? You gonna tell me he's retired? I mean, he's still making movies. Have him do this and Harry Potter.
I mean, to be fair, the editing of this down to 2 hours may have totally fucked any direction this guy tried to put into it. So I'm willing to take that on as a possibility.
Of course it is, because you know those moments are just expanded upon director moments where like the false scare.
There's
the
a lot of things.
Room.
I mean, when he cuts the H into Ben's stomach, you know. If you remember that in the book, that is an insane scene.
Pretty tough, yeah.
And it's so fast forwarded in this. Like, it's just like, boom, boom, do this. I'm crazy. I'm going to cut the head. And then the car drives by. And if you remember in the book, like, that's a big deal. That car drives by and he calls out for help and things and all this stuff. And it happens in like fast motion in this movie. Like, it's not as impactful. You see the car go by and you don't really get the feeling of like, of what that means, of how it has kind of encapsulated the town. And, you know, has taken the adults and made them not give a shit and has made these kids kind of like crazier than they normally would be, you know. And that's just it's just all in fast forward on this movie. I don't know.
We're going to talk about this further on a further future podcast because I will catch up to this in the next week or so. Let's talk about Birth of a Dragon here. This is the Bruce Lee biopic or the. Biopic. The dragon, the Bruce Lee story. With
well, how real is this then? Is this totally
how real is this?
Fake?
About as real as Rogue One, Star Wars story.
That's what I thought. I
mean, this thing is myth building. Yes, it's based on a real event. I basically went and saw this. I'm a Bay Area native. This is a story that took place in the Bay Area in the 60s. It always cracks me up that Bruce Lee had one of his earliest dojos just miles away from here. And so this story was about a guy who was sent over from the temples to basically fight Bruce Lee to see if he would stop teaching to other races.
This is a true story. I mean, that's a true story, but not the movie.
Let me tell you what the problem with this movie is. Mm-hmm. There are – basically Bruce Lee is about the third most important character in a movie that's about Bruce Lee. They make – The guy he's fighting is extremely enlightened. Okay, let me tell you why it's called Birth of the Dragon, because he comes over here, and even though he may have lost the fight to Bruce Lee, he showed him that his ambition and arrogance, because all Bruce Lee wants to do is kick ass and be a movie star and beat the shit out of people and teaches his students to beat people up and, you know, not the beauty of the martial art. So the Birth of the Dragon is truly his enlightenment and understanding that the martial arts is bigger. Get the fuck out of here. And then it has this character, this white kid named Steve McKay, who's obviously supposed to be like Steve McQueen, who has this love affair with an Asian girl who's indebted to the local, whorehouse and the triads, and he's got to get her out, and it's all up to this. So it's, and you're like, this is all so bad. It's an hour and 43 minutes, and it's laborious. It's forced. The only thing going in this movie is a fairly charismatic performance from Philip Ng, who's Bruce Lee, but everybody else is just best suited for B-movies.
This is supposed to, this is the fight that, that he got really hurt?
No, in reality, so in Dragon, the Bruce Lee story, the Rob Cohen film from 93, he gets paralyzed and writes the book. That's all bullshit. What happened is he meets this guy, but it takes him a little – it's harder than he thought it would be, and he realizes that all his old teachings were bullshit. So he created his new style where he said, fuck it, we don't fight with swords. He basically invented mixed martial arts in a lot of ways, like – you know, grappling, kicking, punching, all these kind of things that had been around, but he put them all into one and got rid of the excess and the stuff that didn't work.
The story goes he hurt his back or something, right?
No, that's only for you, but that's if you want to watch. Yeah, that was for dramatic purposes in the Rob Cohen movie. Basically, Jason Scott Lee is a much better Bruce Lee. That Rob Cohen film is a much better movie, not even comparable.
That's a good movie.
That I would tell anybody, go back and watch that with anybody you care about and do not watch Birth of a Dragon. It's terrible, and there's a reason it had a low release and it absolutely tanked. It's the typical end of August shit dump. I was pissed I saw it. I thought, oh, you motherfuckers got me.
It looked like a cheap movie, too.
It's cheap in all aspects. It's visually cheap. There's no production design. Like, there's emptiness in a lot of the rooms. It's just, it's cheap all around. Anyways, tell me about Mother. What's going on with Mother? Actually, very lightly tell me about Mother. You can't go full bore Mother on me yet, so I don't know how we're going to talk about this. No spoilers.
Well, I don't have to ruin it. The movie will ruin itself pretty well, so I don't have to do that. So no spoilers.
How do you talk about this? So either recommend it or
I'll tell you what's out there already, and what Jennifer Lawrence is saying and all that stuff, because I don't think it's any secret that this is basically a biblical, you know, oligarchy and I don't like referencing. What would I call this? It's full on like Fountain, but like to the nth degree, right? So this is a retelling of the Bible, of events in the Bible, through like this, like. They live in Javier Bardem is God. This is all shit you find out.
I didn't know any of this. You're already spoiling shit.
No, I'm not spoiling anything. You'll realize all this. This is the fucking movie. Once you see it, it's just all so obvious.
I have no idea. I haven't seen anything about this movie. I've been staying away from anything about this. You're already telling me
God. You should. I don't know.
I wanted to walk into the fucking movie cold. Now you're telling me he's God. I didn't know that.
You'll find out immediately. What do you want me to do?
Tell me either to go see it or not to go see it, and then we'll move on and we'll talk about it on a future podcast. I had no idea about this.
Oh my God.
This
is what I'll say about it. It's definitely not worth seeing. It's a giant pile of crap. It's Aronofsky to the nth degree. He's really taken just, I guess, the hatred that he's had for the world and humanity and put it all into this. So there's no good side of anything to this. It's all bad. Very one-sided. It's all on the surface too. There's no nuance to this whatsoever. So like I say, you're going to realize everything, what it is right away and with exactly what's happening. It's one of the just, you have to be dense. There's a lot of people out there saying they don't get it and stuff, but you have to be one of the densest people on the planet not to get it. They've spun all this stuff in marketing to a degree that's ridiculous. It's not a horror movie on any level. It is also not a what the fuck movie. The only thing you'll be asking is why the fuck is this a movie and not a short film? But it's also incredibly pretentious. Like to a degree that it's just hard to watch. And it really feels like, you know, professor of film, Darren Aronofsky here making a movie while sleeping with his star pupil, Jennifer Lawrence. Uh-huh. Which is the other part of this that really gets to me in so many ways. 'Cause she's, when she goes around talking about this, and this is one of the reasons I saw this, was because she's all around just talking about how amazing this movie is and all this stuff. And I saw the film and just think, why the fuck, you know, what's going on? And then I realize that she, her and Aronofsky are a thing now. And she ain't selling no fucking infatuation of the movie. She's selling an infatuation of the man that made the movie. Like in a big way. And it's just like, God damn, you know.
And she got you to see it. Isn't that what you're saying? As a fan, you feel betrayed because her fans gave this a cinema score of an F.
It deserves it.
Huge.
Yeah, I feel betrayed because this is all about it. It seems to me, I'm looking back on it and knowing all this information, that she's really in love with Aronofsky. And she's been, instead of choosing to jump down the rabbit hole on her own, she's been led down, you know, and it's just, it's like a weak movie. It's a weak premise. And it's just, it's weakly told, you know, it's all around just not good on any all level.
Right. That right there is a spoiler-free review. We might have to go back.
Kind of. Javier Bardem is God. I'll say it again. He's God. Well, who's the mother? Who do you think the mother is?
We're not talking about this. We're moving on.
Well, it's so obvious. Actually, there's not even anything to talk about. Like, when you spoil this movie, you can't spoil it because it's either you've seen it and you know what it is or you haven't. You can't spoil it after the fact. I don't, but we'll talk about it. You'll have, you will see this movie. You will see it. Yes.
At some point, yes.
Because I really need to just, I need to vent.
Yeah, I need to unload on somebody.
On a whole other level, yeah. It's just one of those fucking movies, just like, oh my God.
So you're asking me if I'm going to watch this movie so you can yell at me?
Yeah, well, yell with you. Believe me, you're not going to like this.
No,
did you like The Fountain?
I liked it more than I liked Black Swan.
Oh God, Black Swan's fucking incredible. But I tell you what, this makes The Fountain look like a masterpiece.
not my favorite. There's a reason The Fountain did what it did, you know, and it's very
old. Yeah, and this is worse than that.
I'm not the biggest Aronofsky fan.
No, I pretty much like everything except The Fountain and this.
I like Pi and I like Requiem. I didn't like The Wrestler.
No, I liked The Wrestler.
Fountain was okay.
What else did he do?
Black Swan
I liked a lot. He did something else too. Oh, Noah, I actually thought was pretty decent.
Noah
for
was
what it is. It's interesting.
Know, Noah was interesting. Yeah, I'll give him that. Because he had balls in that to go a certain way. So I didn't mind that.
Yeah.
But I think I liked what you said about the, you know, filmmaker with the star pupil going down a rabbit
hole. That's what
it feels
like, especially after the fact, knowing about it. It's like, oh my God.
Like a career move that she would have made on her own otherwise, or sorted out this material, you know.
Nah, she just wanted to be in an Aronofsky movie, and so she kind of just, it feels like she just got
that people have
bowled over by it. Yeah, but it almost feels like, you know, I don't, it's not really starstruck, but you know what I mean? Like, she's just like, I don't know. She's infatuated with him to a big degree. She thinks he's super smart and super intelligent. It's like, I don't know. You watch this movie, a lot of his movies, really. Some of them are very good. I will admit the Black Swan, I think, is really amazing.
You think this is any different than Sharon Stone rallying on about Paul Verhoeven and how fucking much?
Yeah, exactly. But that's how. Yeah, exactly. It's almost like God. Like, you know, don't sell me on that shit. That's not. I don't give a shit.
That's not cool.
You know? Yeah. I'm not in your fucking. I mean, are we gonna have a threesome? Because maybe then, you know. But if you ain't selling that, then I'm not interested.
Well, I saw Jackie. You seen Jackie?
I attempted to watch Jackie.
Meaning how far did you get?
Oh, my God. I maybe 10, 15 minutes into it.
It's a slow burn, isn't it?
Oh, my God. And it annoyed, that 1:6:6 aspect ratio is just annoyed me.
It is annoying. That's why it looked like that.
Yeah, why don't you just shoot it? Like, this isn't helping anyone. You're just cutting off the sides. It looks dumb.
It's supposed to give it that old school look, obviously, period. All it did was actually make me feel claustrophobic and slightly like irritated to be in this movie world. I'm kind of a JFK assassination aficionado in a weird way. I have like a weird obsession with it. I've read two large books that were the basis of the Oliver Stone film.
Well, this doesn't
back in 91. This so this
have anything to do with that, though, right? Or does
no?
It?
But I love this. Love this event, but I have a fascination with this event and the characters, the real life characters surrounding it on both sides, good and bad, and the whole thing. So I did have an interest in this movie. I think the best thing about this movie is Natalie Portman's portrayal, which I think is kind of obvious. Yeah, I mean, because there's a moment in this before she gets off the airplane at Love Field in Dallas. I don't know if you made it that far in the beginning when she's going to be greeted before the assassination happens. And she gives this kind of look of contempt to her assistant before she walks off and then turns it on. I just thought, like, that is a beautiful piece of acting right there, because nothing was said. Mm-hmm. It was a minor facial movement and great performance in a movie that is just downright depressing. Obviously it is, because it's about an assassination, but dreary in the look, the tone, the mood. There's no energy in this movie. She's downbeat and kind of withdrawn as a character, and this movie has that mm-hmm. feeling. It's an autumn movie that you would fall asleep to. If I saw this in the theater, I would have fallen asleep. I had to struggle through it and take turns, you know, 45-minute kind of breaks.
Do it. Yeah. I thought it was just – it's super boring. Like, I just don't understand why I would care to see a lot of this behind-the-scenes stuff where she's just not doing anything.
It's not a boring event, though. That's why I don't know why it's such a mundane movie.
It's not, but it is her – The story that they tell, or at least as far as I got before I gave up, was like, you know, she, like the whole beginning where she's redecorating, like she put all that money into redecorating the White House, and they spent her own money and they try to build up this character, and you're just like, God, like, who cares? Like, I get what you're trying to do, but it's like, oh my God, I don't really care that she did any of that.
It's also a very small movie. It's an independent film that they tried to sell. It's a little bit bigger than it is, and you can tell the constraints of the independent world on it.
Well, she really is fantastic in it. I'm just, the happenings around her, as far as that I could see, was just not worth telling. You know, it would be like making a Steve Jobs movie, and everything you talk about has nothing to do with Apple. You know, it's just him, like, you know, hanging around.
Yeah, it makes no sense.
I don't care, yeah.
We saw Baby Driver, and it's re-released here on Labor Day weekend. And what do you think? Because I still haven't seen it, but I was dying to see it. I hear this is the movie. This is the coolest movie of the summer. The sleeper hit of 2017. What's the story?
Yeah, this is a surprise movie. First of all, Edgar Wright, I talk a lot about direction. Like, there's not a lot of directors out there. He directs the shit out of this movie. I don't always agree with it, and I really don't particularly like the beginning, how they establish this baby character. I think it's a little bit boring. You know, he listens to music a lot, and he's dancing around and doing things, and they spend a lot of downtime in the first half of the movie in between jobs that he does. He's basically a getaway driver. Mm-hmm. And so that, you know, and I get it, because he falls in love with this girl, and they, of course, use that in the end of the movie. And so they're establishing everything. But the bad guys in this, I mean, John Hamm is fantastic in this. And I mean, honestly, I really got to give it up to Jamie Foxx for just being a fucking awesome bad guy. I mean, fantastic lines that these characters get. And just a lot of, like, machismo, you know, just this big, you know, a lot of in your posturing. Face, like, I'm a tough guy and this and that. And, like, and everyone's kind of trying to explain to Baby what the real world's like, you know, but he's in it. He's in the real world. You know, that's what these people don't realize. And that's kind of what happens in the end of the movie, is that they, you know, he proves it very well. But this has one of the most satisfying endings that I've seen all year. I mean, so it doesn't matter that, you know, the first act, the second act's a little slow in the beginning. But when this thing picks up towards the end of that second act, it picks up like mad, and it just goes, and it is fucking good. It's the only thing I can say. See this movie. Like, it's just one of those movies. You're just like, fuck. By the end of that movie, I was like, I did not expect to be so, like, amped up and just be like, yes, you know?
Well, apparently this is the one time where the gossips were true. The rumors were true that Baby Driver is the sleeper hit of the year. I can't wait to see this. I don't know how it's escaped my attention so far. But this and Wonder Woman were, like, the kind of surprises, I guess, of 2017. If you look back on paper, that you wouldn't have thought that they both would do, mm-hmm. you know, respectively. Well, because obviously Wonder Woman did four times the business of this, but both of them were expected to be successes, but not on the level that they were. And the breakout performances of Gal Gadot and this kid. And Kevin Spacey, actually, he's making a comeback, who we'll talk about in the next section as well.
Yeah, but he's basically Fat Steven Seagal in this movie.
Nice.
It's pretty fucking funny, yeah. But he's good. Kevin Spacey's always good.
And the soundtrack on Baby Driver is obviously good, right?
You know what? That was one of the directorial things that I would say I disagree with. I didn't particularly like a lot of the tracks.
Ooh.
I thought they were a little boring. Yeah, but I really didn't. They didn't connect with the visuals to me. They weren't bad to ruin it. You know, they didn't ruin anything, but it just wasn't. I don't know. It wasn't like like Guardians of the Galaxy. They sell a lot of that in the same way, you know, and it wasn't as powerful as that, I would say. He chose a lot of music that was a little more elegant, I guess.
Scott Pilgrim versus the World, another Edgar Wright film.
Yeah. So just, I don't know. There wasn't enough power in the music, I would say. I guess. I don't know.
All right, let's turn our attention to the trailer attic portion of tonight's show. Do we have a run-in on this, or are we just going to go right in?
Oh, let's do this.
So let's do it formal.
Trailers can be wondrous things, giving us insight into the unseen movies of the future. But when they're bad, fire photon torpedoes. Shields up, red alert. Prepare for trailer addict.
Okay, dokie.
All right, so we're going to talk about all the money in the world.
I'm not going to need the shields or the torpedoes on this. I think all three of these are good.
I think all three of these look fantastic. I'm actually glad you said the same thing.
All
right,
let's go to it. All the money in the world. This looks so fucking good, man. How does this movie look good? Why is Ridley Scott making a good movie? How is it possible? Tell me.
How did he not make a good movie of Aliens, which he started? He makes a shit one. Like, where was this one?
How does this look so good? Yes, this is a, J. Paul Getty is a very rich guy from...
The richest guy.
A long time ago. Yeah, not that long ago. But, and this is a true 70s. Story. His grandkid gets kidnapped, and he basically doesn't want to pay for the ransom for it, And this is that story, It has Michelle Williams, I believe, is the kid's mom. Mark Wahlberg is a detective.
Yes, I believe. Sort of investigator, yeah.
And Kevin Spacey is John Paul Getty. And I tell you what. He actually disappears into the role for real. They do makeup and everything. Really disappears into it. Looks fantastic.
Absolutely. I wouldn't have called that was him.
No. So looks, just looks great. Like, I don't know, almost a little Tony Scottish a little bit. No,
well,
am
if
I wrong?
Anything, it's as good as American Gangster look to me.
There you
that
go. Yeah. That's probably, probably a little bit of a better thing. I kind of felt like I don't, for some reason, A Man on Fire kind of a vibe. Not as, obviously as...
not as aggressive.
Yeah, but kind of that vibe. I don't know, maybe...
I got what you're saying. Well, if anything, this will be down as one of the best trailers of the year, I think. Cut-wise with music.
It's so
and
awesome.
Thing.
Yeah, it just makes you so amped to see this movie. And
it's a piece of
it
art.
It looks like a good movie to boot. Like, I think this looks super interesting. I really want to watch this. I'm down. I'm just happy that... He didn't die before he made a good one.
I know. Don't leave us with Alien coming.
Yeah, for real.
Let's move on and talk about Red Sparrow, which looks like the real Jennifer Lawrence film of the year of 2018, her next movie here, which is basically essentially, wow, I think she just crushed me in the neck. Jennifer Lawrence just kicked me in the throat. How dare you, girl?
Watch
go back
out,
to your
man.
Room.
That's mother. She'll come
go
get
back
you.
To your room. Seriously, I'm God. All right, so I'm sorry. Getting back to
Red
go back
Sparrow,
a bit, Jenny from the block.
Red Sparrow, J-Law.
Say thank you. He likes to be called.
Anyhow, J-Law. This looks like I don't know what you were going to say, but I'll say La Femme Nikita.
This looks like I was going to say Point of No Return.
There you go.
Americanized version of that. So.
I don't mention that movie. That's the movie I don't talk about, but
which is basically The Bourne Identity with a female.
Yeah. Lead. Yeah, but then this looks super interesting. She's essentially a Russian spy trained to use her body, right? Sensual to get the secrets and stuff. But obviously she can fight, of course. What good would she be if she couldn't do some action, right?
But I do like that she's the Lolita character. Like you said, de la femme fatale, and in all the sense of the words. And she has that aggressiveness. She sold herself already as being some sort of an action heroine in the Hunger Games movies.
Hunger Games, X-Men,
And she has a nice look to her where she pulls this off. She has even like European.
She looks like a femme fatale. Yeah, she does look like a Russian and like, yeah.
Exactly, something like that. I agree.
This also has Joel Edgerton in it, who's fucking awesome. So I don't see how this can go wrong, you know, really.
Directed by Francis Lawrence, who has a great
Hunger Games
visual as well. I'm a big fan of Lawrence. Ever since Constantine, I really liked even Water for Elephants. It shot beautifully. So this looks like the movie that
Lawrence did the good Hunger Games movies.
Lawrence's probably agent said, please do this after she did Mother. Like, please get one in the can. That's it.
Do another one. Well, she's supposed to be taking a break, right? She's got like Red Sparrow and like the X-Men movie coming out. And I thought she was attached to something else, but she's supposed to be taking a break now. So it's like, God, thank God Mother wasn't your outing film, you know? Go out with Red Sparrow and X-Men. Ah, makes more sense.
Well, I didn't want to tell you, but she's in love with me. So now you know.
What?
She just go in your room, Jail. Go get back there. All right, let's talk about another great trailer. And these, like I said, all three are great trailers on this show. This downsizing film, the music. Alexander Payne.
The music.
The music is well done.
Doesn't the performance, it just the set concept. The scene? And Matt Damon looks funny. He looks so happy and stupid. Like good, Matt, funny Matt Damon.
The best way for me to describe this would be like a 90s movie that was never
Thank you!
Discovered.
Holy fucking shit, that is exactly what I thought when I first saw this. I thought, I didn't want to say that because I didn't think anyone would understand that, but it is. Doesn't it have that vibe and that, just the idea of like shrinking people down, and it's called downsizing. It feels like a fucking 90s movie, doesn't it?
I was like, is this June 1998? No one's on VHS?
I love it. This totally has the feeling of a 90s comedy like this. I don't know. This could come out the same year Toys came out, you know, it feels like.
I was thinking Truman Show.
Truman
kind of
Show,
had that
there you
vibe.
Go, is another one, yeah. It just has that 90s comedy, like, odd comedy vibe.
But it's going to have a real humanistic touch. It didn't surprise me Alexander Payne's name popped up as the writer-director on this at all, because he has this kind of weird vibe. To me, I was thinking, oh, this is kind of like the Truman Show mixed with Ted in a weird way, but more... Mm-hmm. More with the James L. Brooks touch, if you will.
And such, you know, fun special effects, you know, shrinking people down
for good stuff, for good,
you know, in order to, yeah, in order to, so you don't overpopulate the earth, it's cheaper for them to live and whatnot. And then then great special effects on top of that, because you have tiny little people.
I like that. The things I was thinking were things this trailer even shows, you know, the movie's going to be smart enough to deal with certain things. Like when they shrink him and he goes to grab his dick, I thought, well, that would suck to get shrunk. And, you know, and he goes, and the first thing he does is look at his dick and goes, oh, thanks God. You know, so I thought there was a nice touch right there. And I like movies like this that have a sci-fi concept, but don't lose touch with it. It's a hard thing to do. So if they can actually successfully pull this off, I'll be interested. But so far, this trailer is money. And Damon looks great in it. And it just looks like an interesting – and after the summer we've had and been so down lately about movies, all three of these kind of just re-interest – just got me all – I was like, oh, these are great trailers that you would see traditionally, and that would make you feel that movies were a little bit larger than life or using their special effects to tell a good story.
Isn't it interesting? We were talking a little bit about 3D movies, right? And the movie pass, basically, you know, you can't go see 3D movies, but all the movies I've seen on movie pass so far have been non-3D movies. Here's three more movies. These aren't going to be 3D. Are we having at a turning point here where we're starting to make not movies in the idea of we can upsell these films by having them in 3D, you know, upsell tickets and stuff, to are we going to just start making good movies? Could that happen? Could that actually happen?
I mean, I can't speak for Francis Lawrence as a great filmmaker here, but he's definitely a good filmmaker.
It doesn't matter. The movie looks good, you know. That's what I'm talking
about. You got Ridley Scott. You got Alexander Payne. Those are both Oscar-dominated directors. So you have filmmakers coming back. Now, maybe Aronofsky made too personal of a project with Mother, or too, you know, is too much of a passion project to really score. But at least you have our authors of films coming back. Sure. And they're not just seamless –
the danger with the Aronofsky stuff is that he may
he can go too far.
He may poison the land. You'll get that when you watch that movie. For future filmmakers making movies that are that weird, you know, because it's such a shit movie. Like, if he screwed it up there, you know, they may not be tempted to put enough money into it to get an actual release out of those types of movies, you know, which is unfortunate. I hope that they.
Well, I did hear that they didn't platform that movie because, like you said, once people go into it, they know what it's about because it's not really a surprise. And that they figured that they had to go out.
Super surface metaphors and stuff, like so obvious shit. I don't know.
Right, well, I think though, all these.
Well, no, I won't tell you. Well, I don't want to ruin it. I was going to say there's another theory for Mother that actually does make it a little bit more interesting, but not too much. It's still surface, so you'll see it first. We'll talk about it, yeah.
Next podcast on that. So we're going to leave you guys with these three recommendations on these trailers. Trevor recommends it with reservations. He does not recommend Mother. I say stay away from Birth of a Dragon. We both thought Jackie was a dreary and depressing experience. And Trevor, like many others, says Baby Driver is one of the better films of the year, if not the best film of the year so far for you. On your top 10?
On my top 10. I don't know about best, but certainly reinvigorates you to go to the movies. I'll tell you that much. One of the best endings, I would say, or the most feel-good ending that kind of just sweeps you away, you know, sweeps you off your feet, really.
Aww.
Great movie.
Getting me all blushy over here. And we all like the trailer here for All in the Money, Red Sparrow, and Downsizing. Check those out when you get some time. As always, we want to thank you guys for hanging out with us on the Bungalow Mavericks podcast. I want to thank you guys for listening on iTunes, Stitcher, and wherever else you may be getting this podcast. We'll be back with you next week with a retro for Moonraker. Until then, speaking for Trevor Anderson, I am Jason Rugard, and we are the Movie Mavericks.
Oh my, another magnificent episode has come to an end. If you're craving more, set your destination to moviemavericks.com, warp 9. Engage!